when I was with Marine Corps University after Dewey, we had what we call interagency students, so students that worked in the federal government. They were federal employees, but they weren't active duty military. And so a lot of times, you know, as service members, we think of the military perspective, but there's often a lot of other agencies that are working to make sure that those national security goals we talked about in 103 are met. So how the State Department works diplomacy, how USAID helps humanitarian stuff, a lot of times we don't necessarily think about that unless we're thrown into something. And it's like, okay, I need to talk to the embassy because I want to run this operation, or the disaster's already happened, and now I've got that on top of trying to figure out all these other federal agencies that can bring aid together. So there's a lot of people that work to keep the United States safe and to meet national security objectives beyond the military, and we have to understand we are a big piece of the puzzle, but we're not the only piece of the puzzle.
Hey everybody, I'm Chief Xander Gamble, and on this week's episode of Pass the Word, I've got Mr. Russ Evans here, our Associate Dean of Naval Studies, and we're going to be talking about the fourth course in Naval Studies, the civil-military relationship, right?
Yeah, civil-military relations, yes.
So, why did we choose this course as part of our five courses?
Well, this course is a fairly broad, it covers a lot of interesting things. So we have the basic setup of the government as far as checks and balances, how much power for decision making should go to the president. Because as an example, it's a discussion as far as being able to react quickly and also making sure we don't have too much power in one individual. That's always a conversation with how things are structured with the government. How laws are set up. When we talk about aid to civil authorities and posse comitatus, how much help can the military actually give to other agencies if there's a disaster? And where should those lines be to make sure that the military isn't abused or used for things that it shouldn't? And we talk about how civil society sees the military, and what the impact is as far as, do people understand us? Do people not understand us because the military is now such a small percentage of the population and so much bases have been consolidated? So if you're in Hampton Roads area, it's pretty easy because they're all over the place. But if you're in St. Louis or Portland or other places, the military has been concentrated, so it's like you might know somebody, but if you don't know somebody, how do you relate? Do you see things on TV, see things in the movies? Is that really what it's like? So there's a lot of conversations about the role is for the military, and so we look more broadly from like the DOD perspective as far as what are the partners that DOD has in working with security in government agencies. What is the relationship between the general public and the military as far as how does the military make sure it does things so it stays a trusted institution? Because a lot of surveys have shown that, hey, of all the things that the federal government does, what does the general public have the most faith in? It's the military. But unfortunately, the numbers as far as, have been fluctuating. So is there things that we can do better so we preserve that trust? And then as far as if we look at how the government is set up, how do we declare war? Is there a reason why we've not declared war since we went to war in World War II? How do war powers act? So we try to look a little bit at the legal aspect, a little bit at the civil aspect, and then also the combined national security aspect. So there's a lot of ground to cover, but leaving the purely military, hey, here's what the services do in order to accomplish national security goals, and then say, okay, what is the role of the military member in society? How does the military maintain that trust? How is the government structured for national security, and then what are the agencies that come together? That's a lot to cover, but it's something that is very topical because it's something that is evolving, and there's the conversations about, hey, here's how we should use the military, here's how the all-volunteer force should or shouldn't work. And so I think it's good to have those conversations because, it, again, it's something that, that comes up. We deal with it in different ways. We may not have the conversations exactly that way, but it's something that we touch up on in a lot of different areas. And so might as well take it head on and have those conversations. And again, with the perspectives of people that are across the force as far as what they've seen in their experience, what they've seen in the bases they've been at, and the agencies that they've worked with overseas, and some of the responses that they've had domestically, whether it's natural disasters or other things where they're called to work with civil authorities.
And so, like, because this all comes from the federal government, the one document that kind of governs our federal government is the Constitution, right?
Certainly. We'll actually go into and look at as far as, how does the Constitution lay out certain powers? Why are those powers where they're at? What are the limits as far as, what can the president do? What can the Senate do? Why are these powers sort of distinct and different, and how do they come together? And again, I mentioned it before, there's a challenge between having flexibility and speed, but also making sure that not any one entity has too much power. We'll also look at, the role of the Supreme Court as far as, looking at the actions of the military as far as reviewing cases or laws that apply to the military and say, here are some examples of things that the Supreme Court has done that impacts what we do.
So instead of being like the history class, this is kind of more of a government, political science type course.
Yeah, I think that's one way to describe it. But sort of like the history course where we're not studying history for history's sake, we're looking at government or political science as it directly applies to us and the military member. So again, trying to make it more applied and more focused and more relevant for the military member.
So if we're looking at it, at how it applies for us, how does the average service member, the average sergeant or second class petty officer, take this and apply what they learn in this class to their daily job?
Well, it could be as simple as understanding why certain things happen in as far as rules and laws, and understanding some arguments where it's like, I've heard some people say some things and I didn't really understand what they meant, and now I actually see what the law says and why people have these conversations, and I understand both sides a little bit better, so they're more informed from that perspective. And then the other aspect of it is one thing that we talk about is the need for the civilian population to have trust and faith in the military. And what does that mean? How do I conduct myself as a member of the military that preserves that trust, and why are my actions important? Just like, in your unit, people are looking at the next senior person as an example. If you don't have a lot of interactions with the military and the civilian public, and you have a limited interaction with one particular person, that might be how they think the whole military is, because they don't have an opportunity to see a lot of military members. So we have opportunities to make very positive impacts or potentially negative impacts through one interaction, because that's the only view of the serving military that individual has, is through that interaction. I mean, it's interesting that, with social media, one military member can reach a lot of individuals that aren't in the military, and sometimes that goes well and sometimes it goes poorly. What are the consequences of those things? And how do you think about, hey, how does this relationship work? What are some things that I can do, not only myself, but advice I can give other people that have not had this benefit, as far as, hey, that's a really good idea, or, hey, maybe that's not a good idea. And you may not have understood why it's good or bad because you've not had the opportunity to think sort of how that bigger picture comes into play.
So it's not just about being a good service member, but being a good citizen.
I don't think you can divide those two, correct?
Right. So to wrap this up, basically we've got the NAV 104 is the civil-military relations course, and In it, we talk about the separations of powers. We talk about how the DoD fits into the bigger picture of the federal government. And really, the average service member can take this and apply this in their own lives because they can become a better citizen of the country and of the world.
That's certainly a big part of it. And also, again, understand some of the context as far as, hey, decisions that are made, why are they made that way? What are the impact and what are the things that go together for them?
All right. Well, thank you very much for coming on. We're going to have one more episode with Mr. Evans here when we're going to talk about the capstone course. So stay tuned, stick with us, and we're going to get more information out. If you haven't yet, go to usncc.edu, sign up for one of our associate degree programs, and you'll be able to get all five of these courses as part of your degree program.